From Norwalk to New Canaan, from Monroe to Milford, Fairfield County listens to the Lisa Wexler Show on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
203-333-9422 if you want to pick up the phone and chat. It's rainy. It's not snowy. It was supposed to be much colder to get the snow. Here we are ushering in 2022 in just a couple of days. And we've had a couple of days of cold weather, but not that much. It's another rather mild Connecticut winter. One wonders if we'll ever have, we'll have an occasional blistering storm, but whether we'll have consistently cold winters, I don't know. It could be a very long time. But I will tell you that I saw something incredibly fun that I want to do. And I have to confess, you know, Bill is a Hallmark movie addict, don't ask. And one of the fun activities they showed on a Hallmark movie, many of which, by the way, are filmed in Connecticut for the Christmas season, is snow tubing. Have you ever been snow tubing? I've never been snow tubing. It's a 255-acre snow tubing park in Connecticut, and it's at Powder Ridge Mountain Park and Resort. I have never been there to see this. I would like to go see this. It is a ski resort in Connecticut. There aren't too many, as you know. But snow tubing, unlike skiing, isn't dangerous. I'm not going to break a leg. And it really looks a lot of fun because you don't have to have any skill, any balance, any anything. You just hop right in and go all the way down the hill. The gear is supplied. It's an hour and 45 minutes. There are multiple snow tubing chutes. You'll have plenty of room, according to what they're saying at Powder Ridge. I don't know if they're manufacturing the snow there or not, but it's in Middlefield, Connecticut. If you've been, if you want to jump on the phone and tell me about it, I'd love to know. 203-333-9422. In the meantime, because this is the last show of the year, we're going to do a little bit of a recap. And I guess what I want to do is hear from you today. This will be the theme going forward. 203-333-9422 if you pick up the phone. I would like to know from you, in terms of your highlights of the year, let's end the year on a positive note. As you look back over 2021, what stands out? What are some of the highlights of the year for you? What stands out if you look over this year? I mean, for me, I had a big 2020 year because my daughter got married, and ever since then, it's been a little bit downhill. But I would say for 2021... I think the highlight was honestly thinking about life getting back to normal again and sort of hoping that we would. I know that seems rather generic, but that's the truth of it. I think that's why it seems particularly down right now that we have been going back. All right, let's go now to our guest. His name is Lucas Johnson. Lucas Johnson hails from Danielson, Connecticut, a beautiful part of our state. And Lucas is a student in high school. He's a student in a tech school. We're going to hear about him. And he had the guts to put his thoughts into writing in a letter to Ellington's Board of Education, which was then passed on to Connecticut's health commissioner, basically pleading with the powers that be not to segregate high school athletes on the basis of vaccines. And Lucas Johnson feels pretty strongly that that has a negative impact and would have a negative impact on peer-to-peer interaction. He leads a group, I don't know much about this group, called the Connecticut Students for Liberty. Lucas Johnson, welcome to the Lisa Wexler Show today, and thank you for calling in. Good morning.
Good morning, Lisa. Thank you for having me on.
You're welcome. So, Lucas, let me get the stats first. How old are you?
So I'm 17 years old. A little bit of a correction. I go to school in Danielson, but I live in Griswold, another little quiet, beautiful part of Connecticut.
Yeah, Griswold's a beautiful part. The Griswold Inn is in Griswold, right?
I'm not sure. I would imagine so from the name. So.
Yeah, no, it's really a pretty little place. Okay, so Lucas Johnson, so you're 17 years old. You're a public school student?
Yes, I am. Yep, I go to school in... at Ellis Tech in Danielson. Nice little rinky-dink tech school, but one of the best in the state, in my opinion.
Okay. And you were unhappy about some of the policies coming down from the governor, or maybe not the governor, your own local school board, because a lot of this has been decentralized. So, Lucas Johnson, what policy in particular were you not happy about?
So as you had mentioned, my little group there, I started at the beginning of the year, and really I've been fighting against quite a few of the COVID regulations that we have in school. But this one in particular that I was, you know, frustrated about and voiced my concerns about is not from the governor per se. What it's from is from the CIAC, which is the body that governs high school and middle school and childhood athletics, and the Department of Public Health. And what they had said is that if you are a student who is vaccinated, you can unmask in all sports. And if you are a student who is unvaccinated, well, you are going to have to mask in all sports except for swimming and gymnastics, where they feel as though it's a danger, and wrestling, which they also feel as though it's a danger. I, as you had said, I felt as though that was segregation, and I put my thoughts out there, and it got to the Ellington Board of Education, but I had actually sent it to quite a few places, including the entire Connecticut General Assembly. So, but again, I feel as though it's discrimination.
So let me just catch up our public. Since then, with the advent of this crazy variant, which has really taken epidemic proportions in our state and beyond, SEAC has changed its policy. Am I correct, Lucas?
Yes. Yes, you are. So the governor's office put out the night before it was going to go into effect that they were going to mask all high school athletes instead of separating them based off of vaccination status.
And do you think that that's in response to the reality of this vaccine, or also in response to some of the points that you raised about how it would make it difficult for peers?
So I actually believe that it's multifaceted. I do believe a part of it is because of the spike. However, in my belief, since they knew about the spike before, you know, before they announced it, and because of the fact that they announced it the night before very quietly, I tend to think that a large reason that they changed this is because of the amount of public backlash that they've gotten. Because in my opinion, what this would do is this would stigmatize unvaccinated students. And that's in line with Ellington's letter to the Department of Public Health. But I believe that, you know, it puts a competitive advantage in the favor of vaccinated students. And it separates kids based off of a medical decision. You know, in my opinion, what it would have done is it would have further exacerbated the mental health crisis that we're seeing in our children, just because, you know, now you're going to have kids who are unvaccinated who are going to seemingly be punished, would have seemingly been punished by their school systems for, you know, them not choosing to take this medical decision.
So, Lucas, let me ask you something. Since you're being so vocal and upfront, are you somebody who doesn't want to take a vaccine for COVID-19?
See, the thing is, it doesn't, that's not really a thing that's important in the argument, because it, as it relates to this, you know, it's not as much about whether the vaccine is good, whether the vaccine is bad. The thing is, what this rule would have done is this would have segregated kids based off of this decision. And I think that the larger issue that we needed to address was the fact that it's not the right or the prerogative of the state to segregate these kids based off of this medical decision.
And tell me something about this. So, okay. So, and you think that it would, I understand what you're saying. The segregation, do you think the segregation would have led among peers to other kinds of repercussions, other kinds of nasty remarks or sort of like, I don't know, what did you think the segregation was going to lead to, Lucas?
So I personally believe that because of everything that we've been told over the past year about how if you don't choose to take a vaccine, then you're killing grandma, when you physically identify those who've not been vaccinated, it would lead to bullying among peers. You know, I already know and have experienced bullying and ostracization for kids who are unvaccinated. I was talking to a kid who was allowed to go to school with this kid, allowed to ride the bus with this kid, but then he was not allowed to go to a event, a party or a sleepover or something like that with his group of friends because he was unvaccinated. So I believe that the bullying and the ostracization against unvaccinated students is already real. And what this rule would have done is it would have, you know, brought this to light. It would have increased that bullying and the harassment against unvaccinated students, but also it would have led to animosity against vaccinated students because you would have had unvaccinated students who now feel as though their peers are getting a competitive edge, which would have been absolutely true because of a medical decision that they made, but they chose not to make. you know, and it's unfortunate because now with the rule going back, I think that there's going to be animosity against unvaccinated students. So I believe that the rule presented was a lose-lose situation where kids were going to get bullied, you know, if this rule was, you know, put through. And now that the rule has been rescinded, I do believe that there's an opportunity for animosity to be brought up against unvaccinated students who didn't want that gruesome reality to come to light.
We're chatting with Lucas Johnson, who is a student who feels strongly that SEAC, which is the governing body of school sports, should not have put out there a decision that would have given a, you think it would be a competitive edge for people to be able to play sports without a mask versus those who would literally physically have been known to be unvaccinated and also have to wear a mask while they're competing in a sport. So for a lot of different reasons and levels, you thought it was bad policy. Is that right, Lucas? On a lot of levels.
Oh, absolutely. There's you know, quite a few things wrong with it. And one of the issues that I had, too, is what they did is it seemed as though everyone was hiding behind everyone else. So the governor hid behind CIAC. CIAC hid behind the Department of Public Health. The Department of Health hid behind local school boards. So they basically said, well, we're just allowing people to do this. And if your local school board chooses to either mask everybody when they could choose to unmask some people, or if they choose to discriminate and stigmatize unvaccinated students, well, they made the decision, then it's not us. So another big issue I had with this was that everyone was hiding behind everyone else when no matter what the decision made, no matter what the decision was, the students would be the ones losing. In my opinion, either they should not have held the carrot in front of some kid's face and then taken it away by, mm-hmm. you know, having this opportunity. Either they should have been masking everyone and remained consistent, which they've chosen to do, or allow everyone to have the opportunity to unmask if they see fit.
I gotcha. I hear what you're saying. So let me ask you this, Lucas Johnson. Talk to me a little bit about how this is now 2 years, and 2 years as a ratio of your life is a lot longer than mine. It's a lot more significant. Can you tell us from your own point of view how you think COVID has had an impact on your own mental health, on your own ability to learn in school, in terms of where you saw your own academic achievement 2 years ago versus now? Do you think you've suffered? Talk to us a little bit about generally your reflections on these last 2 years.
So personally, I believe that everything that you've been saying is absolutely, you know, correct in that this pandemic and the restrictions that we've put up against kids have been disastrous for my own mental health, my own educational opportunity, but also that of almost every student in the state. When we got back to school for the first time in person, one of my conversations was with a friend of mine who I was competing with for the top of my class, you know, valedictorian. And when I came back, I asked him what his class rank was, and he told me that he didn't care anymore because virtual learning was so bad that he just dropped. So now you had a kid who was competing for a full ride scholarship to UConn who came back and he didn't care. And then I had a 10-year-old student who I am personal friends with who has a medical mask exemption. So he has a note from his doctor saying if he wears a mask, it will endanger his physical health. So he goes to school without a mask. And because of the fear that has been spread among children by, you know, the state as it relates to COVID, this kid who went to school without being able to mask as affirmed by his doctor was ganged up on by his entire class of 10-year-old kids and told that, you know, he was not only going to be responsible for grandma dying, but he was also, you know, a waste of human life and things like that. And you can see examples across the state of kids whose mental health has suffered. You know, you had said earlier in the segment about sports being canceled and things like that. Our entire response to the pandemic has harmed kids. And at the beginning, I can completely understand the panic, but knowing what we know now, kids are at almost no risk for this virus. Right. They're at statistically no risk. And yet we are some of the farthest, we're one of the farthest populations from moving back to normal. And that's frightening in my opinion.
One of the big stories today, Lucas, that I did not announce, but it is one of the biggest stories, is that there are many school districts that are afraid that they will not have staff. And by staff, they mean janitors, cafeteria workers, as well as teachers, to be able to open school after the Christmas vacation. I don't know if you've seen that. I've been getting hints of it a little bit through my radio show, through my listeners. I can feel the fear there. A lot of teachers have been nearing retirement. Some of them took early retirement anyway, which is fine because they didn't want to be exposed. That's their choice. But there are many others who frankly just don't want to be in a classroom anymore with other children. They have accepted that this thing is so fearful for them that they don't want to do the job. That is a reality. I don't know what to say about that, Lucas. I feel personally like we've let a lot of the kids down.
I completely agree with you on that. You know, we've lost quite a few good teachers over that, the fear that they don't want to pander into these, that they don't want to put into these kids. But also, you know, we had these vaccine mandates that came out a while ago. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Kasim Outlaw, or I mean, I think I mispronounced his name, or Lorna Naig, or I think I pronounced her name wrong also. But
I don't know who these people are. Who are these people? I don't know who they are.
So these are two of the best teachers that we had in the state. The first one that I mentioned, Outlaw, he actually had won Teacher of the Year in Connecticut a couple years back. Now, both of them decided that they did not want to get this vaccine, and they decided that they didn't want to test because they felt as though that violated not only their rights, but that it may not be in the best interest of their own health. And because of that, they were forced to leave their profession. So Connecticut has lost many, many, many teachers over this entire situation. And like you had said, the kids are suffering, you know, and those two teachers that I put out, we lost two of the best teachers that we had in the state because we are peddling fear about a virus with a 99.993% survivability rate for these kids.
Yeah, it's a dilemma because the same rate for survivability for the kids is not the same depending upon your age group or comorbidities as a teacher. Don't you see? So that is the dilemma. And that's why I feel very bad. I think we've let down a lot of the kids because it's a question of courage and bravery also. And I think it's a question of risk versus benefit analysis for a lot of these teachers. As I say, depending upon how old they were, how close they were to retirement themselves, they made an individual decision that they just didn't want to do it anymore. And, you know, in terms of freedom, you can't force people to work who don't want to. It's very difficult.
Well, absolutely.
You're talking about two teachers who felt they had to resign as a result of policies, which you may agree or disagree with. But I think the vast majority of teachers who left just left because they just left because they didn't want to be dealing with COVID in the classroom. They didn't want to.
Yeah, no. And I'm not sure if, you know, it's a little bit difficult to tell why the vast majority of teachers left. You know, I know quite a few teachers who've left because of the mandates, but I know also teachers who, like you've said, left because they don't want to deal with COVID in the classroom, either because they're scared of getting it themselves, which I can absolutely be sympathetic to, or because they don't want to, again, be forcing these kids to adhere to these standards that only send these kids into a state of fear over, again, a virus for them that has no, that they have no reason to be afraid of, you know?
Yeah, I hear you, Lucas. Well, Lucas Johnson, what are your own personal plans? You're 17. Are you completing? Is this your senior year, your junior year? Help me out.
So this is my senior year at the tech school I was telling you about. I'm an electrical student, so I'm studying to be an electrician. And I'm looking
Good
at that
you.
As a career field. I'm also looking
Good.
At college and some other things. But at the moment, I'm a little preoccupied, and in my opinion, with fighting some of the things that are harming kids in the state. But I have some plans for after school, so we'll see how those unfold.
Well, thank you very much, Lucas Johnson, for coming on the show. I'll be reading your op-ed pieces. I may not agree, just so you understand, with some of your underlying, I wouldn't say underlying, that's not the right word. I would say some of the conclusions it seems to me that you may have reached about whether or not the vaccine is in your best interest. I think you and I would go toe-to-toe, and I would implore you to get a vaccine. Having said that, and of course you haven't said on the air whether or not you've gotten one, but if we were just in a private conversation and I found out that you hadn't, you and I toe-to-toe, I would be wanting to persuade you scientifically that it's in your best interest. But I will tell you, Lucas Johnson, I appreciate what you're writing about. I appreciate that you're focusing a lot on the mental health of kids and the statistical reality that for our children, by and large, overwhelmingly, COVID has not been dangerous to them, with the exception of a few isolated cases like there will be with flu or, frankly, a lot of other things. And on a risk versus benefit analysis, we need more kids to be in the classroom for real life all the time. And I think we know this. So, Lucas Johnson, thank you very much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me on. It was a pleasure.
Pleasure. We'll be right back with more of the Lisa Wexler Show coming up.